pretty cool. And it got me because when somebody sent it to me, they didn't tell me what it was about. So, but you caught on. Well, you're a brighter group than I am. But so, but anyway, so happy Mother. You know, and not just happy Mother's Day, ladies. You do so much, and just because God's made you with a soft heart and graciousness, kind of built in. Thank you. So we honor all of you, ladies, and we are so grateful for you. We're in a two-part series, and you probably realize, playing off the Family Fun Day, as well as Mother's Day and heading into Father's Day, doing a series on family, I thought that would be kind of a fun thing to do. Now, I want to say, because some of you are in different dynamics, I kind of want to intro this by saying something very important. Some of you are sitting there maybe going, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing sitting here? I'm not a spouse, I don't have kids, or maybe I'm divorced, or maybe I'm single, or maybe, you know, my kids are gone, maybe, hey, it's kind of too late for me, or whatever. Don't ever forget that unless you have hermitized yourself so that you have no relationships whatsoever, and especially in light of the fact that we are part of God's family, okay, whenever you hear stuff about family, realize the principles God gives in His Word apply to us in our lives, in our relationships, in our friendships, definitely in our spiritual family, okay? So don't ever forget that, because some of you might be discouraged by this, but I want you to be very encouraged, and I know that you're going to be very, very challenged, as I was in putting together this message for this morning. Now, when we left off last week, if you weren't able to be with us, you missed the best message ever preached in the world. No, I'm kidding. It was all right, you know, but I'm just going to review really quick what we talked about, because it's the thing we live with every single day, not just in our family life, but in our Christian life in general. And if you'd like to, if you're a guest and don't know, I give you a little listening guide, and you can fill that out if you'd like. If not, if that's kind of mothers, you do not have to fill anything out. It's Mother's Day, all right? So just, you know, but here's what we talked about last week, some very, very important things where we left off. First of all, we talked about when it comes to family, there is this tension. There's this tension, and it's true in our Christian lives. There's this tension between what's real and what's ideal. What's real is that you're going through a divorce. What's real is that you're in your second marriage. What's real is that maybe you're a newlywed and things aren't going quite as wonderfully as you thought. The real is that you have children, maybe the real is you're trying to have children. You're trying to make your marriage work. Some of you are just trying to get married. Maybe you've got children and they're a prodigal child. Maybe your spouse won't come with you to church. Maybe you have an ideal family and it kind of freaks you out a little bit. And you're just thinking, I'm just waiting for the shoe to drop, because we can't. I mean, nobody's allowed to be this happy, right? You know. So whatever your real is right now in your life, whatever that real is. And I'm not sure what that is, but real compared to the ideal, there's often this tension. And our culture wants to get rid of tension. Our culture doesn't like tension. Regardless of how dysfunctional your family is, or how much your marriage is struggling, or whatever, our culture wants to say, hey, it's okay, relax, that's normal, that's fine. You know, everybody does that. They want to normalize everything so we don't feel bad. This is the same culture that gives every kid and every team a trophy, whether they win or not, right? And kids know that it doesn't really count for much. Everybody gets one. You know, because our culture, why? We don't want anybody to feel bad. We don't want anybody to feel left out. But there's something inside of us, especially I think as parents, those of us who've had kids, who know there's this real tension. Sure, you can tell me, hey, your dysfunctional family is completely normal, you know. Hey, everybody has trouble. Hey, you know, it's okay. Everybody gets divorced. Hey, you know, everybody has two or three or four marriages, you know. That's just the way it is. Hey, that's fine. There's still something inside of us that kind of haunts us. And when I look at even my own kids, or maybe one day my grandkids, to even think of that, my mind, what does our minds do? Our mind shifts to that ideal. What do I want for my kids? I want better than I've had. And I had a great family, but I still want better, right? You came from a great family, perhaps. And you say, but there's some things I still want to have better than I had. So there's that constant tension that we face between what we experience and what we're told is normal.
And yet there's this sense of this ideal. There's this ideal of men and women falling in love, you know, until death do us part and staying in love and all of that. Not that you don't have problems, but just it's kind of, you know, intermittent, wonderful romance with, yeah, occasional problems, but then wonderful romance. And we think, yeah, but what is it? You know, how can we do this? And, you know, kids who actually, after they leave home, actually want to come back and, you know, see you and so forth once they're adults. Families that are family-centered. There's that ideal, and there's just enough of this ideal or this memory or this idea of what is ideal that it's just, we've got this constant tension. So we talked about that. Then Jesus comes along as if we have this our own ideal, even from the Old Testament looking at Scripture. Then Jesus comes along and he raises everything. He makes it painfully clear that there's a tension, but also he bumps everything up. Remember we talked about that? Don't commit adultery. That was Old Testament law. But then Jesus said, don't lust, because then you commit adultery in your heart. You go, seriously? He said, you thought you knew, you know, Jesus said, you thought you knew the ideal? No. Let me raise the standard on that a little bit. Just so you know. And for those of us who have failed to live up to our own standard even, perhaps, what does Jesus say? He says there's forgiveness and grace. And that's what we also saw. Jesus made this tension much more intense. But then also, as Jesus taught and he pointed out this ideal, he then refused to condemn anybody who fell short. You see? And he got criticism for that. He pointed to, for example, the woman taken in adultery, stone her. And what did Jesus say? Hey, the person that's never sinned, cast the first stone. Go and sin no more. See? So there's this constant tension. And you know, people said, Jesus, how can we ever attain to this kind of ideal? And he basically says, I want you to live in the reality of that tension when you're forced to face a difficult reality, like your family. Like that your family will never be ideal, that your kids will never be everything that you had hoped and dreamed and thought, that your first marriage isn't going to make it. When you have to face the reality, hey, I don't want to, you know, Jesus says, I don't want you to let go and lose sight of that ideal in light of what's real. I want you to live with the tension and also with the satisfaction of God's grace, of God's love, and God's mercy, and that it's sufficient for us whatever and wherever we are. Don't lose sight of that. God has commanded us. Have you ever read the scripture? God's commanded us to be holy. He says, be holy as I am holy. Are any of us ever going to really feel like, okay, finally I'm holy? As soon as we feel that way, we've lost it, you know? And that's the context for this whole series, this tension between we're looking at the ideal and then looking at what really is real. That's the context. And we talk about ideals. Many of you will think, hey, it's too late for me. You see, my kids are already gone. You know, my kids are already raised. Or, you know, my family's never going to be this way. That is the tension. Even in your Christian walk, if you say, well, I'll never be really what God wanted me to be. I'll never really fulfill his purpose. I'll never really be all that God wanted because, you know, what? I'm too old to something. I don't know. Just to something. And God says, don't give up on that. Don't let that tension between what you are sensing and experiencing be thrown out just because you don't feel like you're going to meet that ideal. And the question for Jesus followers, and if you're not one, you're just kind of checking things out, welcome. Hillside is here for you, all right? This is why we do things the way we do here and different from other places, because we want you to feel welcome and comfortable, and we want you to come back. But if you are a Jesus follower, if you really have committed your life to following him, Jesus doesn't really give us an option on this. He doesn't give us an option to pick and choose. He said, here's what's real. Hey, where are you in your now? Hey, I'm struggling with this sin. That's your reality. What's the ideal? Being free from it. That's okay. That is reality and that tension with the ideal. And Jesus says, pursue that. And we minister as a church, but as individuals, we're ministers and ambassadors of the grace of God to people who are like us. And they're like us in that they'll never be able to reach the perfect ideal, but at the same time, somehow keep our eyes on Jesus. Keep our eyes on the ideal.
And I used the illustration even last week. Husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. Will we ever attain to that? But Jesus said, keep at it, guys. Keep at it. So we said that last week. In fact, in Scripture, we talked about, remember the Old Testament? Somebody said last week to us, they walked out, I didn't realize that. But once I started thinking of all the families in the Old Testament, I realized the Old Testament has no good examples of family. Maybe one a scenario, but in fact, there are a lot of bad examples, lots and lots of them. And when we come to the New Testament, we really don't have a lot of examples of families at all, but we have some instruction. And in the New Testament, we just get these teachings about what family is supposed to do. And last week, we kind of summarized the whole thing, remember, by what does it say? And so here's what we got. We got one for husbands, love your wives and be considerate. Wives, submit yourself to your husbands. Children, obey your parents. Fathers, don't irritate your children. There it was, or exasperate, yeah, right? And that's pretty much it, right? There it is. Is that pretty ideal? Quite ideal. You say, you know, some of you love my wife perfectly. Yeah, I'm so sure. Submit my husband. Have you met my husband? Obey my parents. My parents haven't had an original thought since 1981. I mean, you know, hey, don't exasperate my kids. Have you seen my kids? They exasperate me. You know, right? So you're going through this list going, wow, this is kind of crazy. And so we go down through this list and we feel like, oh, great. Fail, fail. Fail. Why even try? Why, you know? And there's that tension again. And again, we're living in a society that wants to just normalize everything, you know? We can either say, hey, this is ridiculous. Nobody can do that. Let's normalize what our current, you know, experience is right now. And Jesus says, I'm not going to give you that option. Learn to live without tension. Now today, because it's Mother's Day, because, you know, I'm honoring all the ladies, I thought we'd go ahead and tackle the most difficult one on the list. So I want you to look at that list up there that's displayed, and I want you to ask yourself, which one is the most politically, go ahead and put it back up there, which one is the most politically incorrect, kind of, I can't believe that's in the Bible, especially if you're a lady, verse, which one, huh, right, maybe the second one. Right? So let's just dig right into the deep end, just jump, dive right in, and there it is. All right. So let's look at it. Let's look at what does actually Paul say? How does it specifically read? He says this, Ephesians 5:22. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Now, I'm not going to close in prayer right now and say, have a good day. I want to tell you why that is so very, very important. And if you're not a Christian person or a Bible person, you're loving this. Because most of the time when you've heard this, you know, misquoted and misused and out of context and all kinds of things. But people use this verse to talk about how ridiculous and outdated the Bible is. I've done weddings where wives not, you know, or to-be wives said, I don't want that submit part in there. I don't want that submit part in there. So I've literally had, you know, you say, Christian, what? Yep, yeah, it's in the Bible, but what is that? Here's why this is so important. This is an extremely important teaching, and let me tell you why. This is actually a specific application to women of a principle that's given to everybody. Okay? This submit thing is not just for women. That's what people often don't understand. And by the way, ladies, whenever a man comes up to me, and you know, if I've talked about this, this doesn't happen as much anymore as it used to. But we've getting a little smarter or tired, I don't know. But whenever a man brings up this verse, you know, to me as it relates to a wife, you know, they'll say, David, but doesn't the scripture say? And I'll say, yeah, hey, wait. Okay, so now remind me again, how does that start, that verse start? And if they don't, then I'll open it up. They'll go, okay, wives. So yeah, Paul was talking to wives, not you, all right? There's other verses that begin with husbands, all right? And so you focus on those and don't read somebody else's mail, all right? You right? And pretty good, huh? Ladies, I got your back on this, all right? So I'm with you. But let me tell you why this is so important. See, Jesus had all this general teaching about love. We know Jesus was about love.
People who haven't even studied Jesus know he was about love. You know, isn't that what they kind of shake your fist at? You say, don't judge. Wasn't Jesus all about love? And the ultimate value is love. The whole law is summed up in what? Love your neighbor as yourself. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, right? So it's all about love. And they said, Jesus, what's the most important commandment? It's love. And the driving ethic and value in the ministry of Jesus was, I mean, for us as Christ followers, what does love require of me? You know, what is it that I have to do? What is it that, because of my love for Christ and my love for my neighbor, what is it that love requires of me? So Peter and Paul, you know, come along later and they look at these new Christian ecclesias, these gatherings of Christians, and there are families, you know, in these groups. They're meeting in homes, but there's parents and there's, you know, spouses and children and all the kinds of normal issues that come up in a family dynamic. And so they begin asking, okay, great. We've got all these principles that Jesus gave. How do we take the teachings of Jesus and then apply them in a family setting, in a family situation? This had never been done before. They had never in history, there had never been an ethic of love like Jesus taught. People talked about love, of course. I mean, you know, even in the Old Testament. But the whole idea that everything should be driven through the grid of love, that was a whole new thing. You know, what does love require of me as a Christ follower? How do I love my neighbor as myself? How do I express my love for the Lord my God with all my heart in a practical way to people around me? This is all brand new. And we talked about that last week, how, you know, it seems to some people, it seems kind of old-fashioned. We look at that list and we go, man, that's really kind of old-fashioned stuff. That's stuff for grandma. And yet in the first century, this was revolutionary. This is the kind of stuff where, you know, people with talk shows had them come and say, what? You're teaching what? I don't know if they had talk shows back then. But the fact is that this was all brand spanking new. There'd never been a culture, never a family or relational culture built specifically around that. And see, up to that point, it was like, up to that point, it was might makes right, you know. And whoever rules the gold makes the rules, right? And that's the way it was. Rome decided what was right, not Jesus, not Christian. And before that, Egypt decided what was right. And before that, you know, the Greeks decided, and so forth. Just keep going back. But it was all about who's the strongest, who's the fiercest, who can win the battles. Whoever had the power determined what was right. Then Jesus comes along and turns this completely upside down. He says, the people with power should use the power for the people who are powerless. And you should leverage your power for the sake of other people. Why would you do that? In that culture, they're saying, are you kidding? I mean, this is huge. This is brand spanking new. And Peter and Paul come along and say, now, what does this look like in a family setting? And that's where their teaching comes from. Paul takes the central teaching of Jesus. He takes that and applies it to every area of the family. And it just so happens that this is how, you know, he stated it as it relates to wives. That's verse 22 we looked at of chapter 5. But rewind to verse 21. Look at this. Verse 21. Actually, that gives us the overarching principle to which we're all accountable. And this is just one specific application. Verse 21. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Submit. Same word. Even Greek. Same word. In other words, all of you Jesus followers, all of you who are trying to figure out what Jesus' teaching looks like in a family dynamic, he says, let me give you one big overarching principle, and then I'm going to, you know, give some applications to it. Everybody is to submit to everybody in your family. So here's the principle. If you walk out, I want you to remember two things. And this is the first one. There's more things I'm going to give you, but this is so important. And this is what Jesus was teaching, was the principle of mutual submission. Mutual submission. That's the idea. I hear sometimes when I'm doing weddings or I'm doing premarital counseling, I hear couples talking about, well, we want to maintain our independence. And I always discourage that. I would say, don't get married if you want to maintain your independence. Now, if you're interested in interdependence, where you need each other, that's great. you know. But the principle, put it this way, mutual submission. That's the idea. Everybody is to submit to everybody in the family. Then he says, now let me tell you how this looks. Let me just give you some examples. Submit to everybody. For example, wives, submit to your husband. See? Husbands, here's what you're to do. Children, here's what you're to do. You know, fathers, here's what you're to do. Here's how we apply this. See, remember, and he got the guys twice. You know, husbands and fathers. He essentially is saying, here's the application. And the verse, wives, submit yourselves to your husbands, is basically an application of this overarching principle that says all of us are to submit ourselves to everyone. And then, but look what he says. What I think is interesting is why. Okay, I'm supposed to submit to everyone. Great. Why are we supposed to do that? It's out of reverence to Christ. In other words, we're not to submit to each other because, you know, out of reverence for each other, because let's face it, I'm an each other, and each other doesn't always deserve to get respect from each other, right? And as an each other, I can vouch for that. I've had times when I don't deserve respect at all. But I am supposed to respect. Why? Out of my respect, their respect worthiness? No, he said, out of reverence for Christ. And this is so powerful. This is life and family changing right here. If this can become central in your family, this is what Christian families are supposed to do and should be the hallmark, the driving force behind Christian families. And remember, it's never going to be ideal. There's always going to be this tension. But this principle of mutual submission, huge, huge. Again, not going to be ideal, but this is our North Star. This means I'm going to leverage my power, my assets, my time, my abilities. I'm going to leverage all of that for your benefit. Whether I'm a father, mother, child, sister, brother, cousin, grandparent, whatever, if I'm going to look for ways to get under your burden with you, you know, for your sake. And I'm doing that out of reverence for Christ because of what Jesus did for us. What did he do? He got up under our burden of sin and he took all of that. He leveraged his power, he leveraged his position, he leveraged his resources, he leveraged his authority, he leveraged everything he had for our sake. He put us first. He died for your sin so you don't have to die for your sin. So Peter and Paul and the New Testament writers, they're just overwhelmed with this love and this sense of extraordinary grace and mercy and the whole idea that Jesus would leverage his power for the sake of other people. You ever had one of those situations where you say, well, you know, I'm not God, because if I was God, I would do it this way, right? See, Jesus is exactly the opposite of what typically a person given incredible power would do. Because a person with incredible power either wants to utilize it or at least show it off. And Jesus decided to lay it down. Jesus, it's interesting. Remember that there's a day in the upper room. The gospel writer talks about how Jesus, even to the disciples, told them, he said, all power, all authority has been given to me. It's a very dramatic moment. But then we also see the picture then where Jesus takes off his outer cloak and he puts a towel over his arm, right? And he washes the disciples' feet. That doesn't look powerful. That doesn't look authoritative, him doing what a servant would do, you know, or at least what a host of a house would do. And Jesus lets them know, I'm setting an example for you that the more power and authority you have, to that extent, you should become a servant of the people around you. And so Peter and Paul are thinking, you know, what does this look like in family? How do we apply this? And God inspires Paul to say, look at what Jesus did. Just follow Jesus. You say, well, wait a minute, he wasn't a husband, he wasn't a father. As our heavenly Father, as our Savior, he comes and he submits himself for those under his authority. So everyone in a family should submit themselves to one another out of reverence for each other, no, for Christ. Not for the people in the family, but out of reverence for what Christ did. And all kidding aside, some of you have family members, and they really don't deserve to have reverence. They really don't deserve to be submitted to. They really don't deserve for you to be a servant to them for what they've done and the hurt that they've caused. You say, they don't deserve. And Jesus says, you're not doing it out of reverence, you know, for them. You're doing it out of reverence for Christ. And let me just say this, and this is just my opinion. We're introduced to this powerful principle of mutual submission. And here's my opinion. It's not just a family thing. Whether you would be in a business, whether you're in a corporation, whether you're in a company, whether you're in a neighborhood, whether you're in a homeowners association, whether you're a group of friends, whether you're a church body, this is the most powerful relational dynamic, I think, that there is. This idea of mutual submission. I think when a group of people come together and they basically say, hey, I'm going to loan you my influence. I'm going to loan you my talent, my time, my authority, whatever. I'm going to do that for your benefit as well. And everyone in the group does that. It's the most powerful dynamic possible. And it was modeled by Jesus. You say, would this work in my place of employment? Just try it and you'll be amazed. People will be suspicious and surprised at first. But here's what Paul comes along. When it comes to families living out the gospel, here's what it looks like. It looks like this. Submit yourselves to one another out of reverence for Christ. Basically, the message is simply this. I'm here for you. I'm here for you. That message of mutual submission. Isn't that one of the things that Jesus said, last words? I'm with you always to the end of the age. Jesus is saying, I've got you. I've got your back. I'm with you. You're not going to do this alone. And isn't there just something in our family dynamic, just knowing, hey, you're not doing this alone. You're not going through this alone. Regardless of where you fall in the hierarchy, you know, we've got husbands and fathers and children and so forth, whether you're the third born or the second born or whatever, nobody in the family is more important than the other. We're going to mutually submit to one another. That's important. None of you as family members, one isn't more important than the other. Now, the thing that blows this up into something powerful is a wonderful single question. And this is what you've been anticipating. I said last week there is a question that can change a family dynamic incredibly. And I'm going to confess to you right now, I lived this very well. I have lived this very well with my kids, not with my wife. This was very challenging for me. This was very difficult, as I anticipated. I mean, we're working on this for about 3 or 4 weeks because this was really, really tough when I recognized this. My kids would say, yes, you do this. But here is the question that can change everybody's family dynamic and where, no matter where you are. The question is this: what can I do to help? What can I do to help? How can I leverage who I am, what I have, and what I have access to for your benefit? What can I do to help? Hey, I think it'd be good. Let's practice it. All right? You want to practice it? This is maybe you've never said this before. All right? So let's try it. I'll do a 1, 2, 3. Okay? Here we go. Ready? 1, 2, 3. What can I do to help? Oh, pretty good. Some of you have said that before. Okay. What can I do to help? Now, you say, that's kind of simple, but follow me on this. This is a game changer. Again, our principle of mutual submission, key question, what can I do to help? I'm telling you, if everyone in your family asked that at least once a day to everyone else in the family, your family dynamic would change dramatically. Some of you are already imagining that. Because you know what this is? This is an offer of all that I am and all that I have and, you know, all of that, giving that to what you need. I'm loaning you me, okay? Now, kids, young people, I want to tell you something. This is awesome. High schoolers, middle schoolers, I'm telling you, your parents, if you say do this, they might have to pick themselves up off the floor. I'm just telling you. And you know what? Try this. Don't wait 2 or 3 weeks because they say, oh, yeah, Pastor David said, so you're doing it. No, it doesn't. You know what? It actually doesn't matter. You could try it this afternoon. They will still be in shock, all right? And what's cool about that is you'll say to them, hey, what can I do to help? And they'll be so shocked and surprised, they'll just sit there and shake. And then you can go to your room, and you still get credit for that. So it's really a wonderful thing. Oh, now, let me just give you a couple little tips. For the young people, okay, parents, you don't have to listen to this, but young people, listen to this. If you ever really want to score some points, do it when your parents have friends over. So, So they're having coffee, having a little dinner. You walk in and you say, hey, mom, dad, is there anything I can do to help? They'll look back and they go, no, thanks, honey, but everything's fine. You'll walk out and the friends will look at your parents and they will say, we don't know anything. Please teach us about parenting. Right? Yeah, right? Yeah, we're having some fun, but I'm telling you, don't worry. You don't have to wait. It'll still have emotional impact, right? You know, we don't say amen a lot around here, but parents, am I right? Right, yeah. That's right. I hear that, sister back there. All right. So, but what I'm saying is that this is for all of us. That's the point. You know, hey, mom, dad, before I get busy, I got homework to do, but what can I do to help you? Now, as I've already confessed, I did this really well. I've done this really well with my kids. Hey, is there anything I can do? Almost daily. Hey, is there anything I can do? Even my kids at college, talking to him or texting him. Hey, let me know if there's anything I can do to help. I want to, be of help. And that's sometimes I've met some late nights, looking at grammar, right? But here's the thing. When we will do this, I had kind of fun with that with the parents. But I'll tell you, all of us as parents, we realize that we live where our young people are. Let me just say, teenagers, to you, we really live where you live, and we just display it in different ways. We know as parents, our teenagers go through a time where, it's like, life is about me. Don't you know that? Duh. We do that same thing as parents. We have different ways, maybe a little more sophisticated ways of expressing it, but we all really feel that way. And parents, depending on what stage of parenting you're in, follow me, things can turn negative really quick, can't they? Depending on what stage, you're always instructing, you're always looking for teachable moments, you're always correcting. And I want to challenge every parent at least one time a day, look at your kids eyeball to eyeball and say, hey, honey, is there anything I can do to help? Mom, I'm going to do that. Oh, anything I can do to help? Hey, dad, is there anything I can do to help? Is there any way I can leverage who I am for the sake of what you're doing? I'm not saying don't help them grow up. I'm not saying don't teach them how to make their own decisions and so forth. I'm not talking about a maturing process. I'm talking, again, about this principle of mutual submission and doing everything we can to keep conversations always from always going negative. See, I know that life's busy. My life is busy. Your life is busy, especially if you work outside of the home. If you work inside the home, 24/7, right? There it is. But if we're not careful, and I'm so guilty of this, if we're not careful at the end of the day, and the kids are kind of ready and, they're busy, they're maybe doing homework or they're getting ready or getting baths or whatever. And it's just like some stages of life, it's like, just get them to bed. I don't want to look spiritual. I don't even want to look godly. I just want to get them to bed because you're just tired and busy, right? But to pause and say, hey, I'm here for you. Honey, is there anything I can do to help? A lot of times they'll say no, Let me say this too for you ladies. Guys, you can plug yours, but ladies, wives, girlfriends, fiancés, moving towards marriage, whatever. This is a very powerful question to ask a man. And you know what we're going to say most of the time, right? Right? It's a guy thing. Yeah. I don't need any help. That's what you're going to get most of the time. But to ask that, is there any way to leverage some of my time? Is there any way to leverage some of my abilities? Is there any way to leverage, what I can do? Maybe I can do something faster for you. Maybe I can move you further along. And again, remember that whole thing in Corinthians? We don't have time to talk about that with our spiritual gifts. Eyes and ears and arms and feet. Right? We're all doing different things. This is all part of mutual submission. This is how the body works together. So it's not just a family dynamic. It's our God's family dynamic as well. But what can I do to help? Now, if you're a married man, you're probably scared of this question. This kind of question scares us, but it's very, very powerful because many of us in our homes, we're sort of the leader. God's kind of put us as the leader. We're not smarter than our wives. I don't know why God did this. This is another one of those things where I know I'm not God, because I would have definitely put the women in charge. They're smarter, more organized, all this kind of thing. But God just said, hey, the buck's got to stop somewhere. So, okay, I pick you men. And we've still been kind of like, you know, slobbering all over ourselves wondering why. But, but I mean, really, I mean, if God put women in charge, I mean, the world would just be a better place. But why? But God's put us here in charge. So we're kind of thinking, you know, we hesitate. And we think, well, you know, honey, before I leave, is there anything I can do to help you today? Because what you're afraid of, I know what you're afraid of. Some of you, you're afraid your wives are going to actually tell you to do something. That's what we're afraid of, right? They're going to come up with something. And that's what, and there's this resistance. And our wives feel this. Some of you ladies, you know how this is. You feel this resistance because you say, hey, would you mind on your way home if stopping by? And you're just kind of waiting. Oh, it's not going to go well. And, you know. And so, men, when we ask this question, we open the door to say, hey, I want you to know I'm willing to leverage my time, my schedule, my abilities, whatever, my concerns. I don't expect you just leverage yours for mine. Because women, ladies, you do that a lot for us. But honey, is there anything I can do to help you? So what can I do? This is a bridge. I mean, this is a bridge of such, just practically speaking to mutual of submission. You know, what can I do to help? Now, why don't we do it? Here's the fear. I mean, here's the barrier. The barrier is fear. We don't do it because of fear. Here's what we're afraid of. And maybe men more than women, I don't know. But I'm just guessing. And kids are definitely scared, right? You younger people, you're scared to death of this. Because you already can envision what's going to happen. Hey, mom, is there anything I can do to help? Well, yeah, now that you mentioned it. And you know, there goes your day. You're out pulling weeds or doing whatever, washing every car in the fleet. It's like, oh, great, there goes my life. And we're afraid that if we say that, you know, what can I do to help? Somebody's going to take advantage of us. You know, they're gonna totally suck the life right out of us, and we're afraid that's gonna actually, because we've got plans, we've got a life, we've got a path we're going down, and hey, is there anything I can do to help? And there goes that. Well, that just ruined that. You know, there goes my weekend. And we'll actually have to do something. You know, and so that suddenly we're not going to be first anymore. And we're afraid that they're going to actually have a question. You know, an answer to the question, what can I do to help? This is why Ephesians 5:21 is so important. Again, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Because there's this sense. Now, use your imagination. I'm not trying to be disrespectful or, you know, or cute with this. But just kind of sense, you know, God's in heaven. And Jesus says to the Father, Father, is there anything I can do to help? He sees us. Is there anything I can do to help? And the Father says, you don't want to know. No, really, what can I do to help? It's going to cost you your life. And Jesus looks at the Father and says, I'll do that. No, you're going to have to take and strip aside all your authority. You're going to have to humble yourself and become a servant in the likeness of men. And you're never no longer going to be number one. You're now going to have to put yourself second behind every single other person on the planet. And Jesus says, I'll do that. I'll do that for them. And so Paul, who spent time with men who watched Jesus die on the cross, and he says, you know, out of reverence for Jesus, throw open the doors to your potential, your time, your talent, everything. Make it available to each other. And say, and yes, here's the answer. Yes, they may take advantage of you. They may take advantage of you. And yes, you may have, your plans may become number two. And you may not get everything done that you want to get done. So I say, welcome to becoming a follower of Jesus. Out of reverence and gratitude for our Savior, who did that for us, you do that for the members of your family. Now, the good news is 99.9% of the time, it's not going to wreck your life. You're not going to have to lay your life down and your plans for your future and all. That's not going to happen. It is going to cost you some time, some energy, some money, a little bit of sweat, some frustration, because, you know, you're going to say to your wife, hey, honey, is there anything I can do to help? And she's just going to open a closet. And in it,
is IKEA furniture. And it's been there for 6 months in the box. She's just going to point at it, and you're going to open it up, and you're going to be frustrated, and you're going to realize, and of course, there's going to be parts missing. That's a given. And you're going to, you know, just these frustrations like, oh, you know. But here's the thing. The thing that question threatens, the question of what can I do to help, the thing it threatens is the key to having a great family. If you refuse to ask the question or engage in this kind of discussion, it's like you're like Dorothy. Boy, I didn't think I'd use this kind of illustration. But you know Dorothy, she's got the ruby red slippers. She's walking around. She just wants to go home, and she doesn't realize, hey, Dorothy, you've already got the potential to go home, right? And that's the same way for us. It's like we want to be happy. We want to be free. It's like you've already got it. You've already got it. You want a happy family? You've got it. Whatever you've got, you mutually submit to each other. And just saying, it's families who say, I'm willing to leverage all of me. That's a great family. Now, you can sit here, and you can anticipate how you'd feel, probably, as you're imagining this, how you'd feel if your children or your spouse or your mother-in-law or father-in-law, maybe you've got a family member living with you like that or whatever, part of your family. And you can just anticipate, how would you feel if they just came and said, hey, is there anything I can do for you? What can I do for you? You know what that would do for your heart. You say, I've got family members who really physically can't do much, or even by talent can't do much, but they're willing to. Just what that would do for your heart. And the only reason we don't, here's why we don't do this. Here's why I haven't done this as well as I should have. We're selfish. Which means, this is the important part. We're not willing to loan ourselves. We're not willing to, to loan ourselves fully to the equation, which means we'll never be happy, ever. We think we'll be happy because, your whole approach, our whole approach to family could be, hey, if I could just get everybody to do what I, mom's right, you're frustrated. If I could just get everybody to do what I tell them, then I would be happy. You will not be happy. That's not what a happy family looks like. We men, if they would just, respect me and do what I tell them to do, then boy, I'd be happy. Man, I know you. You wouldn't be happy. That's not happiness. Happiness, especially in family, what is? Mutual submission. I love this about Hillside, and I just have to brag on you for a second here. I see this all over the place. I don't see big power struggles. I don't see people, and I've been in churches. I've seen churches that, oh, my goodness, it's like, who's the boss, and who's the one calling the shots? I love this. Just, everybody mutually submits. And so what's the result of this? The result of this question focuses on us leaning in rather than pulling away. And men, I wish I wasn't speaking so much from experience, but men, some of your wives can't get you to lean in, and you just pull away. And they've never said it exactly like that, but they're afraid to ask you anything because they don't want to hear the blah, 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 and how important and how busy and how the world orbits around your big old self. And you don't have time for that because you're working and you're meeting and you're da-da-da. It's so important. You're just so important, And your kids aren't, they're leaning in, and your kids and your wife are leaning in and leaning in until they fall over. Because, everybody's got to make daddy happy. Watch out for daddy. Daddy's, And guess what? Everybody does everything they can to make you happy. And I know you're not happy. Why? Because I'm not happy when that's the scenario. See? Because we don't get happy by controlling people. We get happy when we loan ourselves. Jesus as Christ followers made us this way, when we loan ourselves to the people around us, just like Jesus did for us. The key to great relationships, the key to a great family, mutual submission. Now the question is, some of you guys, you can say, well, hey, reading the whole Bible, what happens? Does this mean that there's absolutely no authority whatsoever? We just kind of throw everything to the wind, nobody makes the decisions, and we're all sitting around going, you first, no, you first, no, you first, no, you first, no, you get the bigger piece of chicken, no, you get the bigger piece of chicken, and then it gets cold, and then mom gets mad, and all that kind of dynamic, okay. So what happens? Is there absolutely just no authority whatsoever? What happens? No, this is really important. And again, this is same in Hillside.
It's the same in a corporation. This works the same way. But in family, the principle has nothing to do with authority. Okay? Has nothing to do with authority. Let me tell you what it does, though. It has everything to do with what we do with our authority. That's the key. Okay? This has nothing to do with the decision-making process. This has everything to do with how we manage and approach the decision-making process. Dad, if you feel that God has put you in a position where you're the head of the home, you know, I mean, again, buck's got to stop here. And Christ's the head of the church, so we're supposed to be the head of the family, all that. Okay, so, right? The model is Jesus. Think about it with me, dads, and everybody. Obviously, I haven't met every single person in history, but I would argue no one has ever argued, well, Jesus can't possibly be the head of the church because he gave his life away. Right? No. We would actually say the reason Jesus is the head of the church is because he gave his life away. See? So, men, if this is your deal and you don't have, you know, you don't have to worry about the authority, because it's not about what authority we have or don't have. It's what we do with it. Jesus had some authority. All authority. He has all power, all authority. He's worthy of our worship. And he comes and says, I'm laying that all down because I love you. You know, you're not giving up authority. You're giving away the power that comes with that, just like Jesus did. I'm saying this to myself. I'm preaching it myself a lot. You probably caught that on. But if you think being the man of the house has everything to do with everybody looking your direction and taking orders and whatever, Saturdays are really bad with this. You know, I'm anticipating Sunday. I'm nervous. I'm, you know, all uptight and everything. And it's like, oh, you know, Dad's good, trying to get it together. And, you know, and it's kind of stupid sometimes, really. Jesus just says, you know, the better servant you should be, you know, the more authority you have, the better servant you should be. And men, we should ask that question more. Hey, what can I do to help? Hey, before I take off for the day, what can I do to help? I'm leaving the office. Is there anything I can do to help? Right? We want to tell our kids and our family, I want to lean in. I don't want to pull away. And now, if you're not a Jesus person, you haven't accepted Christ, you're not following Jesus, you can try this at home for free. All right? I made reference to that. As Christians, as Christ followers, we don't think we're better than anybody. We don't think we're better than you. But here's the good news. You can try this at home, and you can probably wait a few days. Otherwise, people are going to be suspicious where you got it. But just try this. And I'm telling you, regardless of a person's religious belief, God can do amazing things. Your life can be amazing. What can I do to help? This will work at work. You say, well, I don't work in a Christian organization. Just try it. You say, yeah, but I'm going to go and I'm going to be all, you know, submitting and everything, and they're not going to submit back. Well, we'll talk about that in just a second. If you're a Christian, however, if you're a Christ follower, here's the thing. You don't have a choice. Right? This is what we're called to do. This is the tension we're called to live under. You see, look at this. Here's why would we want a choice, really? Look at Romans chapter 5, verse 6 through 8 as we're closing this up. Watch this. For while we were still helpless, so do you know what that means? It means that we needed help, right? We needed help. So while we're still helpless at the right time, and in other words, in the nick of time, not, well, yeah, I'll see if I can work that out. I'll see if I can work that. I've been pretty busy up here in heaven trying to work everything. I'll let you know if I can get, oops, sorry, too late, died in your sins. Well, I was busy, you know, okay? At the time we needed, when we needed it, at the right time, this is so important, while we needed God's help, according to our time frame, not even God's, Christ died for the ungodly. So where do we get off thinking somehow this is optional? This isn't. I ought to do that sometime. No, this should be the hallmark of the way we live. This is our family. It's never going to be ideal, okay? I've got to want to just overstress this. You say, well, this is, you know, we tried it, we've tried that, and we still have problems. Yes, you'll never get to that ideal. There's the reality of all my kids, you know, don't do this or don't do that or whatever. You say, my kids don't even go to church and I'm going to do this and whatever. Hey, the ideal is that we should is what we should shoot for and try to create an environment in our homes where the primary question is, what can I do to help? That mutual submission. Because that's what Jesus did. And you know who the ungodly are? I'm going to tell you. The ungodly are the people who irritate you. And what I mean by that is people like this. The people who go, yeah, I believe Jesus died for my sin, but hey, you know what? I'll wait till after I'm married and, you know, I want to do my own thing. I want to live my own life for a while, you know. It's people say, hey, you know what? I believe all that stuff, but hey, I'm just going to pray when I'm in trouble. I'll pray when I need to. You church people, that's fine. Go to church. Do whatever. I've got my own plans. That's the ungodly. God's waiting to hear from them. The people who look for loopholes, the people who have ignored God, that's who Jesus is looking to. And he goes on, he says this, and we'll wrap up. For one will hardly die for a righteous man. You know, you might die for somebody really righteous, maybe definitely for your kids. Though perhaps for the good man, someone would dare even to die. But God demonstrates, he did something. His own love, he demonstrated his own love toward us, so that we're to demonstrate that towards others. Demonstrate his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. It's like God said, what can I do to help? And Jesus said, I know, this is going to be costly. And Paul and Peter are saying, imagine this in a family dynamic. And if family members took their cues from what God did through Christ and extended that to members of the family, it wouldn't be might makes right. It wouldn't be dad's the boss. It's like, oh, dad, you know, dad's the authority, so, and we're all scared. No, it will be like Jesus recognizing he has all authority, and he lays it down. Let's bow.